Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Hook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Okay, trying to see here how many actual nitpicks you have when you've won 7 games in a row. Kind of tough to come up with. Good afternoon, everyone. We welcome you, or good morning, or good evening, wherever you may be. Welcome you in the playbook for a Nitpick Tuesday here on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook with you. 34-9. You dispatch a team that, you know, could still be a division champion. You have 4 games down out of this 6-game gauntlet that we've been targeting and talking about and going back and forth on over the course of the entire season, really. And you've gotten through the first 4 in relatively, solid fashion. I have to admit, after rewatching the game, Sunday evening, after I got done with college basketball, duties over the weekend, that, I'm in the interest of absolute full disclosure, Kev, I'm going to be totally and completely honest with everybody here. I fell asleep watching the game. Now, it may have something to do with the fact that, you know, I was up for a long while and, you know, there was a casino involved and, you know, back-to-back college basketball games and, okay. I'm just going to say that my entire impression of it was that this was easier than I thought it would be. Now, I don't really say that to be denigrating toward the Detroit Lions. I really don't, because I actually think Detroit's a good football team, and I heard Paul say that just in the last half hour of the program. You know, I still think Detroit's a good football team. They are. They are struggling mightily on offense right now. I thought their offense was just putrid. But defensively, that's a team that can get on a run and still win the NFC. I really believe that. They can win the NFC. Their defense, to me, is on par with what Seattle has done, especially against the run. I think you can, clearly you can beat them with the pass, because I thought, you know, the Patriots' game plan to really, you know, pass first and use the short passing game in effect instead of the run on Sunday was the perfect thing to do. Kind of a little what we talked about last week. Detroit never, I thought some of their wounds were self-inflicted. And I thought their game plan was really kind of lousy against the Patriots. And I think they played right into New England's hands, and 34-9 it was. And I actually thought the Patriots left at least a couple of touchdowns on the field. I mean, they could have certainly put a 40 burger on the board or hung half a 100. On the Detroit Lions, a defense as good as they are, the Patriots could have done that. And that's really kind of the scary part about the game. I mean, one of the 3 nitpicks that I had in today's View from Above column was 10 second half points. I'm not kidding. That's exactly what I told Andy just a couple of moments ago. 10 second half points. They just kind of sleptwalked through it, and I'm not so sure that was. I'm still having a hard time. As I go back through it all, I'm having a hard time figuring out whether that was really Detroit's defense or whether it was the Patriots just trying to sort of manage the game, and I think it was a little bit of both. So for Dominic Raiola to be as vocal as he was about cutting Zach Moore at the end of the game because he's PO'd because the Patriots scored with 2 minutes to go. Look, dude, and by the way, I'm appalled that the NFL didn't find him. I'm absolutely appalled. I don't think it was called for suspension, but I think the guy should be hitting his wallet, because that's what guys really pay attention to. They get paid attention to their wallet. They pay attention to their wallets. And I'm appalled that the NFL didn't do that. That's cheap. The guy admitted he tried to take somebody's legs out, admitted he tried to hurt somebody in retribution for the Patriots, in his opinion, running up the score, where they could have taken 3 knees with 2 minutes left and they didn't do it. They're just, you know, you want to play football? Well, let's just play football. Well, then that's fine. Then just play football. Don't go dirty and don't go low on somebody's knees. Play football. See, that's where Raiola was just being a big coward. Absolute coward. I don't mind saying that. That's just, I mean, I understand he's upset. I don't know what to tell you. Winners have a way of rising above situations. Losers cheat or get dirty. That's all there is to it. You know, one of the dirtiest players ever in the NFL history was Conrad Dobler. You remember him? The old St. Louis Cardinals offensive lineman who used to get accused of gouging guys' eyes in huddles and biting guys on their legs or wherever he saw flesh. You know, and nobody wanted to get around the guy. And he had this mean, nasty reputation, you know, primarily in the 70s for being that kind of guy. He played with the St. Louis Cardinals. What did they ever win? What did they ever win? Nothing. So that was another nitpick that I had, you know, was just the fact that, you know, I thought the Patriots handled it as well as they could. I thought Zach Moore, and I know Moore was actually lauded and appreciated by his teammates for not being drawn into the abyss and dragged down into the muck of, getting involved with Raiola or the Lions or, you know, there were definitely words. I mean, that's one thing I could tell from the television coverage. There were words being slung back and forth between the Lions and the Patriots as that game was over. I actually saw Darrell Revis in particular have some words with Ndamukong Suh after that game was over and the teams were walking off of the field. And that's all fine and good. You know, and Revis had a smile on his face through the whole time, and I'm sure he was saying, scoreboard, dude, scoreboard, scoreboard. If you want to do something about it, then do it the right way, do it the legal way, and put some points on the board, which the Lions could not do. The Patriots had them out game planned. And, you know, if you want, you know, to put any blame on that, well, then put it on Jim Caldwell and the Lions for not having a good enough game plan, you know, to produce points against the Patriots. I mean, we can see that the Patriots' defense has improved, but the Patriots' defense isn't infallible. The whole Raiola thing just kind of messed me up. I just thought that, you know, really? You're going to get that bad? I mean, in the end, this is not Pop Warner football, okay? You know, this is not, okay, this is not mercy rule sports here.
There are no orange slices.
There are no orange slices, and there are no trophies for everybody at the end of a game. This is pro football. This is the NFL. If you want to do something about it, stop someone. And they couldn't do it, even with their regulars on the field. So if Raiola really wanted to get, you know, pissed off at someone, then he needed to be pissed off at his offense. Or he gets pissed off at his defense for not being able to stop the Patriots' offense. The whole thing just set me off. So that was a bit nitpick. And yes, the Patriots scoring just 10 points in the second half. That's as nitpicky as they come. When you score 34 against the number one rated defense statistically in the NFL, you score 34 points on them and 10 of them came in the second half. All right. That's pretty nitpicky. But I had to come up with something because really there was just nothing else. It was that kind of a game for New England. The kind of thing where, you know, if you're not careful, you're going to expect too much. And the comeuppance could come this weekend at Green Bay. I think we all know it. It's been the elephant in the locker room for a number of weeks now. This has been a game that everybody's been pointing to. It's been already called a quote-unquote Super Bowl preview, and rightfully so. You've got the number 2 seed in the NFC right now in Green Bay, with Arizona right now record-wise at 9-2, matching the Patriots for the best record in the NFL, and Arizona stumbled this last week, we know. But Green Bay would be the 2 seed, so they would have the bye. I'm not sure there are too many people that really follow the NFC closely that think that Green Bay couldn't beat Arizona, even at Arizona, if Arizona survived, you know, their divisional round playoff game. And we're getting way ahead of ourselves. We're talking about stuff that's, you know, 6 weeks away from now. But you're looking at a Green Bay team that until this last weekend against Minnesota was rolling on people, and they were hanging half a hundred on opponents. And you're going to play them in Lambeau Field, which is one of the best home field advantages in all of sport. Forget just the NFL. I'm not sure there's a better home field advantage with as much mystique and history to it as there is in Lambeau Field in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Going to talk a little bit about that coming up in just a few minutes, by the way, because as you're aware, this is a short work week here for us. We'll have today, we'll have tomorrow, and then we're off on Thursday, like you should be, and the Patriots and the players and the coaches will be for our Thanksgiving holiday. And then we'll be back in a regular work schedule for next week. But because of the short work week, because of the midweek holiday, the Thursday holiday, only 2 days on the air this week. So, yes, today is Nitpick Tuesday. Hashtag Nitpick Tuesday. And I want you to fire off the nitpicks that you do have. What concerns do you have about this team right now at 9-2? One of my big concerns is complacency. I think it's natural. I think you can say you've got blinders on. I think you can say you're looking at the finish line. I can say you're not going to be bothered about all the noise that we've talked about over the last few weeks. And I can still say that, you know what? It's just human nature to think that, well, we're on a roll and to have confidence. And sometimes, you know, this is the big problem here. When confidence turns into overconfidence, you're not always aware of it. The players down the hallway are not always aware of it. I don't even think the coaches are always aware of it. They can say things, but until somebody steps up and smacks you in the face, you don't know. And I'm wondering if the Patriots are approaching that. Now, if they go up and they put a 40 burger on Green Bay this week, then we'll be performing a mea culpa next week. But I'm of the opinion that many of you listening right now are thinking, you know, Green Bay, no problem. We're going to take it because these guys are on a roll. You know, that may be. And I will tell you this, that if they do beat Green Bay, and they are impressive in beating Green Bay in Green Bay, then there may not be much else to keep this team from going all the way to the very finish line. That also worries me a little bit, because I do think that, you know, you can kind of get started on this process a little early. I wonder if they got started a little early. They were 2-2, now they've won 7 in a row. You realize now to get to the playoffs, you're going to say that the Patriots are going to have won 12 games in a row going into the playoffs? That's significant. Just saying. Not saying it can't happen, but to expect it to happen? To expect it? I think that's close to ridiculous. I think that's close to ridiculous. So I'd love your thoughts on your nitpicks. We are going to spend some time coming up in about 15 minutes with two young men. We're just trying to kind of break it into the business. They're both broadcasting majors, journalism majors at Marquette University in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. One of them happens to be my son, Austin Rook. He's actually been on this show before. We had him on years ago. He was a sort of a savant, if you will. When he was a little kid, I got him in here, and we did some predictions against the spread. And incredibly, Austin was like, you know, I remember we did like three picks every week for like 5 weeks in a row or 10 weeks in a row, something like that. And he had an incredible record, like 18-1 or something like against the spread. And it was amazing. And, you know, and I remember getting some emails back then saying, hey, Rook, way to take advantage of a 7-year-old kid for gambling purposes. No, it was for entertainment purposes, but that's how he kind of got his start. Anyway, Austin is a sophomore student at Marquette. His buddy Max Templin is a broadcasting student at Marquette. They do a Tuesday radio show on the Marquette student station in Milwaukee. And clearly in Milwaukee and in Green Bay, they are all things Packers all the time. They talk a little Marquette basketball, and they talk a little baseball when it comes to the playoffs. But, you know, because they did have a decent year in Milwaukee with the Brewers, but everybody's Packers gaga there, as you would imagine. So, you know, I thought, well, this would be kind of fun. Give them some experience here. Austin kind of knows the drill and what we do here inside the playbook. I figure, what the heck? Let's have some fun today. So we're going to kind of look toward the Green Bay matchup on Sunday with these two guys, and we're going to kind of simulcast right along with their program, which is called Calling All Sports on Marquette Radio in Milwaukee. And so we'll share some time for them for about 20 minutes or so this afternoon and, you know, kind of get their feel for what the Packers are doing and what Packer fans are saying and thinking. Are they as confident, clearly, as New England Patriots fans are? And get their perspective and get where they think the difference in this thing might happen on Sunday, because it is going to be in the Packers' backyard. So that's coming up. We'll have a little fun with that coming up in about 20 minutes. And then Eric Friends, who, of course, joins us here in the playbook on Nitpick Tuesdays from Boston.com, covering the AFC East of the Patriots. He'll join us in the second hour of the program again today. So we sort of turned the page a little early from Nitpick Tuesday for a couple of reasons. Number one, frankly, there's just not a lot to nitpick. I know you got them. I know you have them. And I want you to get them out. We need to get them all out. We need to discuss them. We need to go through it. But we have to start turning the page a little bit with a shorter week this week. So we'll look a little at Green Bay today. Of course, we'll spend just about the entire day tomorrow talking about Green Bay and looking ahead to the week in the NFL. So that's what we have coming up. You can get a hold of us here, 855-PATS-500. That's the toll-free telephone number, 855-PATS-500. So climb on board now. If you have questions, in fact, of the guys in Milwaukee today, by all means, pick up the phone, fire off a question about the Packers. 855-PATS-500. Or you can send an email to webradio@patriots.com. You can fire off tweets at JR Broadcaster is the Twitter handle. John.Rook on Facebook, R-O-O-K-E, the last name. And submit a friend request if you haven't done it. If you're listening to the show for the first time or haven't gotten around to doing that, we'll accept that friend request. And then you can post your stuff on the Facebook page. And we can also do the chat function during our programs here. So there's several different ways to get a hold of you on the program. So let's do this. If they're going to go right off the air at you said right out at 2:30, they're an hour behind us, right? Okay, so that didn't go out over the air, or did it, Kev? Okay, he's using the talkback function. Sometimes I don't even know. Okay, so we'll talk with them coming up in just a few minutes. In the meantime, got a couple of other things. Well, here's Tim. Tim just sent this Facebook question, and he said, not sure if you covered this yet or not, but how do you think the running back situation will be handled? Does Gray go back to being number one with Blunt being the backup, or does Blunt take over and now is the main big back? Also, how do you think the D-line and the linebackers will fare against Eddie Lacy? He's big and powerful. Shifty could cause some problems. I personally believe that you go back to Gray being number one. I think the Patriots proved their point. I think they said that we're, you know, considering the fact that the run was not a part of the overall game plan, and it's pretty easy to see that on Sunday, that they just didn't see the need. They sent their message and, you know, message delivered. The fact that they had LeGarrette Blount come in and do what he did, you know, I don't know. Sometimes it's, you know, and I wrote about this a little bit in the View from Above column today, but I could set a bad precedent. You know, guy's not getting what he wants. He's going to whine. He's going to move on, and he's going to turn his back on his teammates. All of a sudden, he gets picked up, and he leads the team in rushing the next week. There's just a part of me, an old-school part of me, that just does not sit very well. So I hope, it is my hope, that Jonas Gray goes back to being the number one back, because I think he earned it. I don't think he did anything to lose it. Did he make a mistake? He absolutely did. Did he pay for that mistake? He absolutely did. I still think he's the number one back, with all due respect to LeGarrette Blount. I'm glad LeGarrette is here. I was a proactive proponent of him being picked up by the Patriots, and you know that if you've listened to this show. But I think Gray's number one. Now, as far as linebackers, D-line against Eddie Lacy, I think that's one of the early keys that you have to watch for. Forget the fact that, you know, Aaron Rodgers is probably the overall number one quarterback in the NFL, and I say that with all lovingness, say that lovingly toward, you know, Tom Brady. Aaron's got a rocket for an arm. He's got great accuracy. He reads as well as anybody. He will be perhaps the absolute best that New England ever faces for this entire season. But Lacy will certainly be a handful overall. All right, we ready to join our fellows in Milwaukee?
It's 1:30 their time, so we'll give it a shot.
All right, here we go. Let's see what we got. Austin and Max calling all sports on Marquette Student Radio. You guys around? Not yet.
Try now.
Okay. Max, Austin, you guys there?
We're here. Are you here?
Gotcha. We got you. We're in good shape. How you doing, guys?
All right, great. Mr. Rook, this is Max Templin here with your son, Austin. We're very excited to be doing this.
Well, I'm very, very glad that you guys are with us. So why don't you guys kind of start it off here, and I'm happy to be a part of your show, and thank you very much for having me, and let me spend a little time with your audience today in Milwaukee. Let's start here by just giving us the lay of the land and how Packers fans feel about the Patriots coming into their backyard, and how concerned overall are they? Do they feel like this is a game they should win?
All right, well, speaking from a Packer fan perspective, I definitely think this is a game that the Packers, I would say probably the toughest game of the year so far. Definitely a great showing, blowing out the Eagles and the Bears in consecutive weeks. Then a little bit of a trap game against Minnesota, only winning by a field goal. But definitely a huge challenge with Tom Brady coming into Lambeau Field. I think it is a huge advantage, obviously, that it's going to be at Lambeau because the Packers are undefeated at home this year. So that's definitely a huge advantage for the Packers. I think it's going to come down to what they decide to do with Rob Gronkowski, because it's so tough to cover that guy, and especially with how young the secondary is for the Packers. I think it's going to be a tough challenge, But we'll see how it happens. Clay Matthews has just recently moved to inside linebacker, so it'll be interesting to see if he's in any coverage packages at all. Julius Peppers is going to have to definitely get some pressure on Brady. If Brady has time to throw, this game is going to go to the Patriots. I say that with full confidence because when he has enough time to find guys, you know, the receivers, they've been better than expected with Brandon LaFell, Danny Amendola, Julian Edelman. Not the greatest receiving core in the NFL, no doubt, but they've definitely, you know, at least to this part of the season, overproduced. So I think if Tom Brady has a chance to get those guys chances to get the ball, especially against this young secondary the Packers has, it's going to cause a lot of problems. And as good as Aaron Rodgers is on offense, if this is going to be a battle of points, I think that goes to the Patriots. What do you think, Austin?
Yeah, I definitely think that the whole Rob Gronkowski thing is the center of attention, I think, for the Packers in this game. And Brady also playing in the cold weather, whether it's at home or away, he's dynamite in the cold weather. So if I'm the Packers, you can't cover Rob Gronkowski with a defensive back. You can't cover him with a linebacker. So they're going to have to double-team him, and then if you double-team him, he's got his outlets like Shane Vereen coming out of the flat. He can throw to Amendola, LaFell, Tim Wright, Julian Edelman. They've just got so many weapons on that team that weren't household names before recently, and now because Tom Brady makes his receivers better, are coming into the limelight. And I expect if the Packers are going to take away Gronk, then those three wide receivers and other tight end and Tim Wright are going to have a big game.
And I think another thing to watch, too, on the Packers' offensive side is how Eddie Lacy fares against the Patriots' defense, because mm-hmm. they need to establish a running game for sure. If Aaron Rodgers is under pressure, he's not going to find guys, and that's going to put a lot of pressure on the Packers' defense, which I think is the main weakness in this game. So I think Eddie Lacy has to have a big game. I think James Starks is going to have to come in a rotation to take some load off because, man, is Eddie Lacy, he takes a pounding because he just goes right into that defensive line. And, yeah, I think that's something to watch, too. I think Eddie Lacy's going to have a big game.
Yeah, and with Lacy, the Patriots, if there's any weakness on that defense right now, it's the way that they stop the run. Now, the past 2 weeks against the Colts and the Lions, they've done a really great job of stopping the run, and I know Reggie Bush was out for the Lions last week, and they had to run Joique Bell all the time, but they did a very solid job against both the Lions and the Colts running game, and they're just going to have – it's going to be – it's going to be a lot tougher this week, especially with like an all-pro caliber running back in Eddie Lacy. I mean, he's so young, but he's so big, and so he's just a horse, and James Starks as well. And that's why I think the Packers are a much more complete team than they have been in the past, is because they've got those two running backs that they can go to when things aren't going right through the air. And I know that that's probably what the Patriots are going to try to take away first, is the passing attack.
I think that another thing to mention is the fact that James Starks hasn't been in a lot recently. It's been mostly Eddie Lacy. I want to see a little bit more of a balance, just because with the pounding that Eddie Lacy takes, just going right up the middle all the time, he's not a fast guy, but he's got a lot of power. So I want to see James Starks get in this game a little more, just because if Eddie Lacy goes down for an injury, that's very bad news for the Packers. So going back to you, Mr. Rook, what are your thoughts on this game?
Well, I think you guys covered it pretty doggone well right off the bat. That's pretty impressive, number one. But I can imagine why you'd be on top of things, because you're there and we're here. You touched on a couple of really important things, you know, kind of looking at it from a power perspective. I think Lacy is a huge key, and I think it's part of the reason why the Patriots have, you know, tried to beef up their defensive front, because when they lost Gerard Mayo earlier in the year, this certainly left them somewhat susceptible, you know, to power runs, and they've done a pretty good job so far of limiting that opportunity for opposing teams. The key to me will be really whether or not the Packers try to do that. I think that they should. I think that they probably will, and the difference will be in whether or not they have the success, and that the Patriots adjust well enough to, you know, being able to keep a guy like Lacy in contention, or you know, I should say contained. Now, the key here, and I think you guys probably realize this as well as anybody, is that the Patriots are very, very good at taking away a team's best attribute. And so you've got to decide, all right, what is it from Green Bay that we want to take away, that we need to take away in order to be effective and try to win this football game in a very, very tough environment? I'm not sure that the Patriots have even decided that just yet. I think you can say, well, we'll take away, you know, a guy like the quarterback. And I think that's not going to happen because, you know, Mr. Discount Double Check is pretty tough to take away. You could take away a guy like Jordy Nelson. I'm not so sure that's even the case, although wouldn't surprise me to see a guy like Revis, get a few cracks at him, or a bigger guy like Brandon Brown to get a couple of cracks at him. And we all saw what the Patriots did with Calvin Johnson this last week. They did a very effective job mixing and matching their coverage. And I think that's where the Patriots have largely been most effective. And I think you guys could probably agree, because I know Austin, well, I know he professes to cover the Packers. He's still a Patriots fan at heart. The Patriots have been able to beat Peyton Manning, and they've been able to beat Andrew Luck, and they've been able to beat Matthew Stafford because they just haven't been consistent with their coverage. They haven't given the quarterback a chance to catch up. So I think that's going to really be where Aaron Rodgers' biggest challenge is going to come from, trying to decide what the Patriots are doing defensively and see if he can't stay a half a step ahead of where the Patriots are in terms of defending him. I do think initially that maybe job one will be to slow down, if not stop, Eddie Lacy. I think it has to be. And then you become one-dimensional, and then you can kind of, you know, hopefully utilize your individual talent with Revis, with Browner, you know, with Patrick Chung, who's proven to be a better cover safety than anybody, especially in New England, ever thought imaginable, and a guy like Devin McCourty, who's Pro Bowl caliber at free safety. Then you can kind of let them do their thing. So that, to me, is the biggest thing, because I think the Patriots will be able to move the football on Green Bay. I think the Patriots will be able to score the ball on Green Bay. Matthews is sort of an enigma to me since he's been move to the inside. Do they really try to match him up? Because anybody that tries to, the biggest problem with Rob Gronkowski when you try to defend him, guys, is that he's too big for the quicks and too quick for the bigs. And I've used that about a couple of guys before earlier this year, but really he's a mountain. He's a mountain that can run. And I'd love to see Matthews try to stick up with him and see how the Patriots try to take advantage of that. That will be a preeminent challenge for a guy like Matthews, and I think that'd be a matchup we'd all like to see. I don't know that, frankly, they can afford to do that, because now you know the Patriots have not one, but two power backs that can run the football against a Green Bay defense that is susceptible to the run. You know that as well as I do. So that'll be an interesting chess match to see how Dom Capers, defensive coordinator, who of course used to coach here in New England, how he decides to pick his poison against New England.
Yeah, and going back to the whole Jordy Nelson thing and who the Patriots are going to take away, that's why I truly believe that Randall Cobb is going to have a big game. Now, Kyle Arrington's healthy. If he's not healthy, that remains to be seen. But I believe that Arrington would match up in the slot. Maybe him or Logan Ryan would match up in the slot against Randall Cobb. And that's why I think that the Patriots are going to end up taking away Jordy Nelson. And that's what they're going to go in with their game plan. They're going to take away the best receiver of the other team, which in this case would be Jordy Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's why Cobb's going to be able to run through the middle of the field the whole game, kind of like Golden Tate did in the first half of the Lions game last week. And, I mean, he had close to 100 yards receiving, and they shut him down in the second half. But for, at least for the first half, that's why I think that Randall Cobb has the potential to break out and have a huge game, because he'll have Arrington or Logan Ryan on him. And Arrington's not healthy, and Logan Ryan has been improving but hasn't been as decent as he was last year.
Yeah, and I think coming from a Packers perspective, one of the biggest changes from last year is just the fact that James Jones is not on the field anymore. He's playing down in Oakland for the Raiders. The Packers don't really have a dynamite three receiver anymore. Davante Adams, the rookie who came in from Fresno State, has done pretty well so far, but he's no James Jones. He might be later on, but as of now, not quite there yet. So definitely Jordy Nelson is the biggest threat to the Patriots' secondary in this game, but if they're able to contain him, if they're able to effectively double-team that guy, then you're absolutely right. Randall Cobb's the guy that's going to be definitely open on a lot of plays. Now the question is, if Cobb and Nelson are shut down, if the Patriots do work that out somehow, I think Rodgers is going to have to look towards his tight ends in Andrew Corliss and Richard Rodgers, two very young guys who, I mean, Andrew Corliss has been in the Packers organization for a while, had some problems with injuries, and after JerMichael Finley left, he's kind of the main guy now. But I think, what do you think, Austin? I think that's a huge, huge component in that game, just the tight end play, because obviously that's the one component where the Patriots have way better tight ends.
Yeah, they do have a better tight end, but that, and that's the thing. It's like you can't cover everybody. You can cover Cobb, you can cover Nelson, but then he's got receivers like Jarrett Boykin that can come in and catch a few balls. He's got Davante Adams, like you mentioned, that can go out and catch some balls down the field. And then he's got the tight ends that he threw to in the game last week against the Vikings, with Richard Rodgers catching a touchdown and Andrew Corliss getting one as well. So you're not going to be able to cover everybody, and it's going to be who they're going to limit. You're not going to be able to stop. You can stop maybe one guy, but you can't stop everybody. And that's why, I mean, this game could be a lot more high scoring than people think, because Rodgers is going to be able to get the ball to somebody. It might not be who he wants to get the ball to. It might have to be his third or fourth read, but he's going to get the ball to somebody, I believe.
Yeah, I agree that there's going to be a lot of points in this game. And just for me, the most exciting part of this game is that I think these are the two hottest teams in the NFL right now. Mm-hmm. You talk about what they've done over the past 8 weeks. They're 15-1 combined record. Only loss coming for the Packers in New Orleans on a Sunday Night Football game.
And Rodgers was hurt that game.
Right. And so Patriots undefeated since their 1-2 start. Packers also starting 1-2. But since that happened, these are no doubt the two hottest teams in the NFL right now.
Absolutely spot on both of those. Let me ask you guys this from a general, kind of a overview here. Was anybody disappointed that, they seemed to struggle somewhat this last week with Minnesota, and why do you think that happened?
Like I said before, I think that's just a mental thing, that it was a trap game after blowing out the Eagles and the Bears in consecutive weeks, scoring 50 points in both games. They were kind of looking ahead towards the Patriots, I think, because that's obviously the big game on their schedule right now. And the Vikings kind of got swept under the rug. But, you know, even though it was only a field goal victory, victory is a victory in the NFL, especially late in the season.
Yeah, and, like you said, it was a classic trap game, and the Packers had a lead for a while and had it late into the game until their defense just stopped playing towards the end and allowed Teddy Bridgewater to do his thing back in the pocket, and he had time to roll out and throw to his receivers. And I mean, he was 21 of 37 for 210 yards and two touchdowns, which is not too bad for a rookie quarterback. And conversely, Aaron Rodgers was 19 of 29 for 209 and two touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
So they played pretty even with each other in that game. And I think it's more of Teddy Bridgewater playing up than Aaron Rodgers playing down. But that's definitely something to look for if you're the Patriots, and seeing Teddy Bridgewater succeed against this defense. If Teddy Bridgewater can succeed, then why can't Tom Brady gash them?
Right. All right, I actually have one more for you, because you guys have seen the Patriots' ability to sort of game plan for a particular opponent. If you were, the Patriots this week, how would you game plan to beat Green Bay?
I would first try to look to Rob Gronkowski first. Now, that's probably going to be taken away. That's my guess. And they're probably going to double-team him. So I would, especially since it's going to be freezing up in Green Bay this weekend, I would try to establish the run. Now, it was different last week because Detroit was the number one against the run in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And LeGarrette Blount still rushed for 80 yards and two touchdowns. And I believe that in Green Bay, cold weather, Green Bay is not that great against the run. I think that establish the run early and then get into the play-action game, where you'll see routes open up for guys like Brandon LaFell, Julian Edelman over the middle of the field, Gronkowski, Tim Wright, because all Tim Wright does is catch touchdowns. So they're going to be looking for him. And if I'm the Patriots, establish the run first, because if they can do that, then everything else is going to open up from there.
I completely agree, Austin, and I think that mentioning the running game, the Patriots just have to get their offense in a rhythm. I think if the offense does establish rhythm early, the Packers are in trouble, because, like you said, that offense is just a machine. There's going to be a lot of points regardless, but I think if the Packers are able to contain the Patriots, especially early in the game, first quarter, I think that they're going to have a good shot to win this game.
That's actually pretty much spot on. I would ask you now in the same turn, what do you guys have questions of me? Anything in terms of the Patriots, or their momentum or their tendencies or anything else? Because I can imagine that the fans have got to be pretty much pumped and jacked for this thing on Sunday to get a playoff bound New England team to come into Lambeau Field, as it always is. And it's huge. I mean, that was one of the things that Bill Belichick even talked about this week, guys, is the fact that it's an historical game from that perspective. You don't get a chance to play in a place like this. Brady's only been there once himself, you know, for a regular season game. It was a game he won, but I think all the Patriot players are actually kind of looking forward to this.
Yeah, I would just ask, from a Packers fan perspective, do you think in the mood in New England right now, do you think it's just overall confidence going into Lambeau, especially after going 8-0 the past eight games? Is it just overwhelming confidence, or is there some doubt right now?
You know, I don't think there's any doubt from the players. I think you could certainly count on a little bit of confidence, if not overconfidence, from the fans' perspectives. And you know, and we talk to, you know, people like that, you know, on this program every week, which is, but that's natural because that's how fans are. When you try to break this down and look at it somewhat analytically, you can understand that Green Bay's got a very good football team, but so do the Patriots. So what happens when you've got the irresistible force meeting the immovable object? Usually it comes down to one or two things. It comes down to turnovers. That's the big one. And both of these two teams are at the top of the NFL right now. The Green Bay 1, New England 2 in terms of giveaway and takeaway. So this is going to be a huge factor in the ballgame. Number two is field position. And a lot of times field position is determined by how well your special teams come into play. And the Patriots, this is where I think the Patriots have a significant advantage over Green Bay, is in special teams. With guys like Edelman, with guys like Amendola, you know, you could even see LeGarrette Blount returning kicks, which he did, you know, last year when he was with the Patriots, and he actually had some pretty good returns. And Steven Gostkowski is, and for my money, one of the top two or three kickers in the entire NFL. They know how to perform in bad weather. And we saw, you know, Ryan Allen, the punter, handle a poorly snapped punt this last week for the Patriots and get off a 75-yard boomer that literally turned the game around just because of the field position involved. So they've got guys that can really do this, and I think that might be a hidden factor in this game. It could end up being the difference, you know, in the ball game. You know, looking from a fan's perspective, guys, you know, all the New England fans feel like, you know, hey, this juggernaut can't be stopped. But when you go to New England, when you go to a Green Bay, and, you know, and I don't think the weather will be a factor because the Patriots are used to playing in cold weather. In fact, they are a remarkably strong cold weather team. Just ask Peyton Manning how strong the Patriots are in cold weather. Then, you know, I think this will boil down to the basic things when two good teams are facing each other, and whichever team has the edge, that's the team that's going to win.
So, I mean, from a personal perspective, what are you specifically looking for out of this game?
You know, I'm not so sure. I'm not sold it's going to be a high-scoring game like you guys think. I think that if the Patriots are going to rely on a run game, which I think is a sound philosophy, I think that they will challenge Green Bay's run defense because it has been susceptible, you know, to giving up yardage this year. Then I actually believe that the Patriots will try to control clock a little bit more to keep the ball out of Aaron Rodgers and the Packers' offensive hands as best as they can. And I think they're going to make Green Bay come up and defend them. So because of that, I think they'll try to control tempo, and I think tempo control will be very, very important in this game. I'm not so sure that either team puts up 30 in this game. Right now, I'm kind of leaning more to a 28, 27, 24 type of game. Either way, again, depending on the aforementioned factors of turnovers and kicking game, special teams.
So, question for you. Here in Green Bay, or in the Wisconsin area, a lot of people are saying, and not just here, but just all over the country, people are saying that this could be a potential Super Bowl preview.
Yep.
And personally, I don't think that's out of the question just because of how good these teams have been over the past 8 weeks leading up to the end of the season here. Do you think that's too far of a statement yet, or do you think that's actually something that could happen?
I absolutely, Max, think it could happen. I think it'd be presumptuous to say that, you know, these two teams are, you know, the front runners because, you know, I think that's not giving Arizona their due. I think that's not giving Seattle, you know, enough credit for, you know, rounding back into a championship contention team with now they have the number one ranked defense in the NFL overall. On the, AFC side, you know, you can never discount Denver. You know, they hopefully, you know, for themselves anyway, they hopefully got back a little bit in gear this last week after struggling the last couple of weeks. To me, the team that might be kind of lying in the weeds here just a little bit could be Baltimore. The Ravens, I thought, looked pretty good last night against New Orleans. So, you know, while the Ravens are going to be right there, I think, with Cincinnati in the AFC North, if the Ravens are able to get into the tournament, they could really be an X factor. So I think there are several teams that you could probably say, look, they could do some damage. They could win. They could do some damage. And frankly, I think the winner between the Dallas Cowboys and Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC East also has to be paid attention to. Now, you know, Austin knows this because, you know, he knows his dad grew up in Fort Worth, so grew up a Cowboys fan. But I've never been a Tony Romo fan. I keep waiting for the other shoe to fall when the Cowboys get into the playoffs, and I happen to think it'll probably happen again this year. That's with all due respect to the Cowboys and to Tony Romo, who I'm sure is a fine human being. I just don't think he's a money quarterback. And so because of that, you know, I certainly like where the Packers stand. I'm not going to discount the Detroit Lions either, even though they did not play well at all against New England this last week. They've got a championship caliber defense as far as I'm concerned. So, and between them and Arizona, I think the Packers will certainly have their hands full in the NFC. So largely it's anybody's ball game. But, you know, if you were to tell me that, you know, New England and Green Bay were going to be the two teams there, certainly hard for me to argue against it.
Yeah, it's definitely hard to argue against it, but going again, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see Detroit there either, but I also think that the winner of the Packers and Lions at the end of the year that is going to have a very significant advantage going into the playoffs, and
right.
It could be clinching home field advantage for the Packers there at the end. And I think that if I can't see the Lions coming into Green Bay and winning at the end of the year. And I don't think the Lions are a strong enough offensive team right now to go that far in the postseason. So that pretty much takes care of them right there, takes them out of the picture. As for Arizona, Arizona's got Drew Stanton at quarterback, and he hasn't been great the last 2 weeks. You can only get by with a backup quarterback for some time. And Drew Stanton he's not Carson Palmer, and Carson Palmer, to be honest, isn't that great to begin with either. So Arizona's got a great record and a great defense, but they're going to need to score some points. And against the better teams in the NFC, I think once they get down to it, they're going to crumble in the playoffs as well. So that's why I think that the Patriots and the Packers are probably the favorites to get to the Super Bowl at this point, especially from the Packers side of things, because the Packers clearly have the best offense in the NFC right now.
And it's hard to predict something so far out, especially with still 5 games to play in the season, but at this point in the season, it absolutely is, just because of the fact that you look at what they've done just over the past 8 weeks after starting 1-2, both teams, nobody can stop them. I think the only hiccup really was Green Bay against New Orleans, but that was really unexplainable, especially since New Orleans is now 4-7, losing to Baltimore last night. So it's just right now, I think absolutely has to be the Super Bowl preview. But like I said, anything can happen the last 5 weeks of the season.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, you guys got anything else?
You got anything else, Austin?
I'm good. This was fun. Absolutely.
Well, maybe we can do this again before the Super Bowl. What do you think?
That sounds good to me.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thank you for taking some time to be with our Patriots audience here on Patriots Radio. And I enjoyed being with you. Happy to do it again at some point in time. Hope you learned a little something. Austin, don't be late for Thanksgiving dinner.
I'll try not to be. Thank you.
All right. That's Austin Rook and Max Templin calling all sports on Marquette Radio in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, sharing a little time with us today. And hopefully you got a little bit of a sneak preview into the game coming up on Sunday, because I thought those guys were pretty thorough about moving on with their some of their looks into what Green Bay can and can't do, and what Green Bay does well in particular. So I thought that was kind of interesting. All right, since we got him holding on, let's talk to Todd in Toronto. Todd, thanks for hanging in. You're on Patriots Playbook. How are you?
Pretty good. Your son did a pretty good job. I was impressed. Both young men.
Thank you, Todd. Appreciate that. He's a good kid. He's a little misguided sometimes, wanting to get into this business, but far be it from me to squash a young man's dreams.
I hear you. Okay, well, just a few things that you want your little nitpicks.
Go.
I noticed on several plays that the pass defense was really, Detroit left plays on the field, I guess is the best way to say it. There was miscatches, there were guys standing wide open. How many mistakes can we make and still be able to beat the Packers? That's a nitpick and a little bit of a...
Well, you know, I think that's actually a great question. I mean, you really can't afford to make too many mistakes if you're going to beat another championship contending team in their stadium. So think about that for a second. I mean, you literally, I have to think about going into it and playing, you know, a near perfect game. And the one thing that concerns me, and this is one of my nitpicks again this week, are the penalties. I mean, 11 flags against Detroit this last week was abominable. And if Detroit hadn't been so just god awful themselves, you know, I'm stunned that the Patriots, I mean, that tells me the Patriots really played one of their stronger defensive games overall, because Detroit was just inept on offense. The Patriots had so many mistakes. They actually, I could have seen the Patriots scoring 45 or 50 against Detroit, because they took points off of the board. Anybody remember Julian Edelman's punt return and how that was called back because of a mistake, of a penalty? So I'm just like, you know, wow, you can't play like that and expect to go on the road and beat a team like Green Bay, or for that matter, maybe even a team like San Diego. Let's keep in mind now, San Diego comes up next week, and I don't mean to jump ahead of things here, because I know we're at the, you know, on to Green Bay, you know, hashtag on to Green Bay mantra here, but San Diego's 7-4, all right? And every game left on the Chargers' schedule is against a team that currently has 7 wins or more, which is unbelievable. So you know that they're going to be, you know, if they're still alive after this week, you know they're going to be loaded, and they're going to be ready to rock. And, you know, and if you come off of this Green Bay game, or and I'm almost of the opinion that I could see the Patriots get rocked a little bit by Green Bay, and maybe to snap them back to, you know, to reality here and get a little bit more mentally prepared for San Diego, because, you know, San Diego's going to be playing for the playoff lives. And if San Diego can somehow get into the playoffs with that kind of a schedule left, they have earned it, brother. That's a team that really should be in the tournament, and a team that could legitimately do some damage if they can survive this kind of a gauntlet themselves. So I don't know how you can go into it thinking, all right, how many mistakes can we make and somehow survive this? They've got a lot of things to clean up. And I realize that I'm probably, you know, preaching to deaf ears, because I'm sure that the majority of the audience thinks that this is just going to be a walkover again.
Yeah, that was my first one. And actually, that's kind of the flip side. I had the penalties, which you took. And my last nitpick was Brady's play selection. I don't know if maybe it was Brady's or if it was what, but the last couple weeks, he's just, every once in a while, he's zoning in on guys, right? You know, he's doing that rookie thing, watching, not looking anybody off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why Hedebo got there. Well, the hold held up.
Yeah, he just
helped a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Tom admitted as much. He said, "I waited on Gronk too long, and ahead of all, read him and did what any good, you know, safety should do." So, you know, he wanted that one back, and he knows he made a mistake, and he knows now that, you know, in that kind of a situation, he's got to look off on another receiver. He just waited too long because he really wanted to get it in there and really thought he could get it in there. And that's the difference between veteran savvy and youthful ignorance. And Tom just had a brain cramp. But these are things you're going to have to avoid cramping on if you want to beat a team like Green Bay and Green Bay.
And speaking of crap, you segued perfectly, John. It's like you're reading my mind. I was wondering if maybe Stork doesn't like talking to Andy, because Andy's complaining about Stork, because Andy talked about him about, well, get ready to bleep, Kevin, shitting himself during the preseason repeatedly and using a towel to stick down his pants because his blank ass was so, and maybe he just hates the media after hearing that. You know, if I heard that, I might want to, and he's lucky he just doesn't pop him, never mind, you know, be curt with him.
Listen, we've all, you know, been on sports teams and in locker rooms, you know, especially if you're, you know, a male listening to this program, where, you know, there's somebody who, let's just say, subscribes to a different theory in terms of personal kemptness, and I'm not casting any aspersions here, because I don't know him well enough to know about anybody's personal habits, nor do I want to know about them. All I want to know is can the guy block, can the guy play, can the guy do his job? And it really doesn't matter what anybody else says or does. So in that, you know, particular instance, for that kind of stuff to even come into the equation, it might seem a fun thing to do. It might seem like a goofy thing to do. It might seem like an interesting or a featureish thing to do. I don't really think it has any place. That's the old school part of me. I just don't think it has any place. I mean, they were talking about, you know, the whole, media interest over, you know, the whole, Beast Mode, Marshawn Lynch thing last week, and him not talking to the media. Look, it's his right to not talk to the media. And I wrote about that this week as well. It's his right not to. He just has to expect that he's going to get hammered for it.
Yep.
And I don't think that a personal habit or a personal preference deserves to get hammered, when it's not part of your job. All right. I don't think it's Brian Stork's or Tom Brady's or, you know, Rob Gronkowski's part of their job, you know, to have personal hygiene habits that are amenable to his teammates. I just don't think it is. It's none of their damn business. Whereas Marshawn Lynch, because he's a featured back, he's a guy that people want to hear from. He's a guy that, the media has to talk to in order to be able to do their jobs effectively. And if he's withholding because he just doesn't feel like talking, unfortunately, that's a part of his job. And that's kind of where I draw the line in the whole thing.
And now with the Marshawn Lynch, my last question, I'm going to hang up right after I ask. Do you think there's any chance that the Pats will have both Gray and Blunt featured in the backfield next week? Because I think that might be something.
Absolutely.
Green Bay can't handle. John, thanks for letting me talk, and we'll listen to you for the rest of the show.
Thanks, Todd. Appreciated that. That's a good phone call today. I actually think that both backs will get time against Green Bay. I don't know if they'll be in the backfield at the same time because I don't think either one is a true fullback, but I certainly think you'll see some I formation. I certainly think that James Devon will be in there blocking for either one of those guys when they decide to go with the heavy package, so to speak. I think you can see them in two tight end sets with a fullback, because the one thing right now that you can pretty much, I think, count on Green Bay doing is gearing up against the run because they know that they have had some difficulties in stopping it. So the Patriots are going to try to take advantage of that. And why shouldn't they? You know, the Patriots feel as I think the Patriots, the beauty of this Patriots team right now is through their versatility. They know that they can game plan and they can effectively play against an opponent regardless of what the opponent shows them. They've proven that. Especially over the last 3 weeks. Two pass happy teams and one that is geared to, stop the run. And Patriots didn't even really try to run much. And then when they did, it was because Detroit was worn out and they kind of surprised them with it. And that's why Blunt had a 33-yard run in the second half. And it's fine. That's what you do. You try to take advantage of what the other team is going to give you. And I thought the Patriots did that exceedingly well against the Lions. So I think, you'll see this team at least try to run the football against a perceived team that has trouble stopping the run. And I think that'll be a huge key. And like I said early in the program, I hope that Jonas Gray's still the one because he frankly has deserved it. He's learned his lesson, and I hope that grudges aren't carried. And I also hope that, this is all about business and putting your best, people on the field together at the same time. But that doesn't mean that, Blunt's not going to play. He should. And I think, if Gray comes in and has some success and you see Blunt come in and have even more success, I think you'll see the Patriots try to, rack up another 200 bills, against a Green Bay team. If the Patriots are able to run with that kind of effectiveness against Green Bay, the Patriots will win the game. As long, of course, if they don't leave the football on the field for three or four times, and fumble the ball away and give the Green Bay Packer offense a short field with which to work. That, I do think, is a huge factor. Can be a huge factor in this game. All right, we move along here. Hour number two, Patriots Playbook on a hashtag Nitpick Tuesday. Eric Friends from Boston.com covers the AFC East and the Patriots, joins us as he normally does on Tuesdays. Eric, is getting exceedingly more and more difficult to find things to nitpick about with this New England team. I have to admit, first time in 14 years of doing this particular program that I'm almost finding myself a little at a loss. I've been able to find a couple. I'm curious to note what you think the Patriots might call on themselves as to nitpicking against the Detroit in a 34-9 win.
Well, this might end up being one of my shortest appearances on your show, John, because I got nothing for you. So,
thank you very much, and have a great day, Eric.
Signing off. No, I'm looking at this game, though. I mean, I've been rewatching it for most of the day, and I mean, it really looks to me like this Patriots offense. I mean, I've just been so impressed with their ability to. They always have been a game plan offense in terms of changing up what they do from week to week to attack an opponent's weakness. But this season particularly, they seem to really excel whatever they want to do. It seems like whatever they want to do, they can do it. Mm-hmm. And it's becoming really hard for me to find a way to not only nitpick what they're doing wrong, but find ways that I could see an opponent even finding a way to stop it.
Sure. And let's kind of take this a little bit further, because I know you probably looked at this game over again as I have. And one of the nitpicks that I had for this week was the fact that the offense managed a mere 10 points in the second half. Been able to glean as to why specifically that happened, or was it more of the Patriots just kind of managing the situation?
Yeah, well, I think they started off the game by spreading out the field quite a bit. I mean, I noted, I'm writing my film review right now, and I noted that they – were spreading out the field with three, four, sometimes five receivers, not
right.
necessarily wide receivers, but
yeah.
guys split out wide, running backs, tight ends, whoever. They were splitting out the field quite a bit, and that kind of neutralized the Lions' pass rush and their defense, spreading them out a bit, and the quick rhythm passing attack was what they were going with in the first half. And then in the second half, it seemed like they were just trying to, you know, keep the clock and get out of there.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, they were able to do that. They ran the ball off the edges like we talked about last week, you know, not running right up the middle into that Lions, into that interior defensive line with Ndamukong Suh and Nick Fairley and C.J. Mosley. Those guys are supremely talented, and Patriots, I think, made a really smart choice not running right at those guys, but running to the outside, and they had some success. LeGarrette Blount in his first game back obviously had a pretty big game for them with two touchdowns, and I thought that was really the key for them in the second half.
Yeah, I thought that was hugely key, and that's actually where he excelled last year, as you'll recall, somewhat, as some of those off-tackle runs, you know, kind of hitting the edge a little bit where he was able to spring for some big gains, especially in the playoffs last year. So once he got loose, you know, past the, the box, so to speak, the tackle box, that's where Blount can do most of his damage. I actually thought that, you know, they did a pretty good job of managing things, and I think that was pretty accurate. I'm wondering, however, though, because of because of the penchant for penalties, and they put, you know, they had 11 more penalties accepted against them this last week, if that didn't take some of the points off of the board. For instance, you know, Edelman's punt return that was called back, that certainly stands to reason as that could have been potential points, as well as a couple of other plays that were out there, and it hasn't bitten them yet. And I'm starting to feel a little like the boy who cried wolf. You know, I say, oh, or Chicken Little, the sky's fallen, and the sky's not fallen yet. These penalties haven't really hurt them in terms of an overall game. When is this going to happen, or is it just not going to?
That's a good question, and I do think, though, that you look at the teams that are being penalized the most, and I mean, they're some of the better teams in the NFL. I mean, the Broncos are the number one most penalized team in the NFL, ahead of the Patriots in terms of total penalty count.
Right.
And then, you know, behind them, the Seahawks are number three, the Steelers are number four.
All contending teams.
Yeah, exactly. These are all teams that look like they're primed for a postseason run here, and I think, the Patriots specifically. I look at their penalties, and most of them are on the defensive side of the ball, which isn't necessarily that surprising, considering the talent they have in the secondary and the fact that those guys are going to have a bullseye on their back just based on their name and their reputation, guys like Brandon Browner specifically. But, I guess if there was one thing to nitpick about that game, it would be the penalties. But, I mean, that's kind of been a recurring theme for them all season long, and I think, you know, they've played well enough all season to mask those penalties and to kind of overcome them. And luckily it hasn't come back to bite them yet. Although, you know, you would like to see that improve, you know, over the stretch here where they're starting to get ready for the playoffs and in the playoffs specifically when, you know, I mean, one penalty and wipes out a score and, you know, you never know what that penalty is going to, whether that's going to come back to bite them in the long run.
Right. I think that's actually a good point. Let me give you two opinions and obviously feel free to disagree or agree whichever way you decide to, whichever side of the fence you fall on as to why these contending teams seem to be the most penalized teams this year. Number one, I think, is the physical nature of the game. And I think the teams that are the most penalized right now have had the hardest time adjusting to some of the emphasis on rules this year because they are physical teams by nature. Not that, say, the Houston Texans or the Jacksonville Jaguars aren't physical. I'm just saying these guys are emphasizing the physicality of the game and are showing it, especially on the defensive side of the ball. As you pointed out, a lot of the Patriots, miscues are coming from that edge, coming from that side of the ball. Defense, number one. Number two, my opinion is that these teams that we're mentioning as the most penalized, most physical, also have better depth. That's why they are where they are in the standings, and so they've got the ability to overcome some of these penalties simply because they've got better depth, they've got fresher legs, and they've probably been hurt less by injuries. What do you think?
Those are interesting points. I'm not sure. I haven't watched the Broncos or the Steelers closely enough to really give a solid opinion on why they're being penalized or what their penalties are, but I do feel like for the Patriots specifically, it does come down to that physicality and the fact that, you know, the penalties on Browner for the defensive holding or pass interference, and Logan Ryan's had a couple, and You know, you look at those penalties, and that's kind of been an overarching theme of the season,
right,
and for the Patriots specifically. So I do think there's an element of that to it, for sure.
All right, fair enough. So how should the Patriots spend their Turkey Day week this week? Overly concerned with Green Bay, business as usual. I mean, you know, it's a different week because of the schedule, because the holiday comes into it. They've usually handled these things fairly well in the past, but I wonder, I just get the feeling you're going into a situation where you're going to face one of the better teams in the NFL that you're going to play all year long. Yes, it certainly could be a super preview. It's not beyond both teams, you know, imaginations to get to where they ultimately want to be. But you got to go play them in one of the toughest environs in the week. Should they be treating this weekend differently?
Well, I don't think so. I think, you know, they've kind of been, you know, like you said, business as usual for most of the season. And really, when you look back at what they've done over the past few weeks, I mean, we've heard it all over the place. The fact that they've now beaten three straight teams that were leading their division at the time when the Patriots played them, mm-hmm, obviously knocking off the Lions, moved them out of first place in the NFC North. But definitely, they've been doing it against some good teams, so it's hard to say for certain that they should, you know, treat this week any differently. I think whatever they've been doing has been working so far. So I do think there's an element of the fact that, like you said, you know, it's a unique place to play in Green Bay at Lambeau Field, and certainly that'll be something that could be a factor. But I don't know that there's a whole lot the Patriots can do about that to prepare for it. I think they just have to kind of roll with the punches when they get there. But definitely a situation where, you know, they have an opportunity to really hammer home the point that they're a Super Bowl contending and a favorite to get there. I do think that this is a game that really could move the needle in that respect.
Yeah, I think it certainly could. They going about their business, I think it's certainly been what they've been very, very good at doing. And with Green Bay being the team that they are, knowing that, as I mentioned, with some of the penalties and the like, there are certainly still things that they can work on, and I'm sure that will all get emphasized at some point. I don't see them putting any more emphasis on this game than, say, any other. It is remarkable that this will be four straight weeks, you know, when you're playing alleged or supposed division leaders, and they've had great success previously. I'm kind of getting a read, though, that you know, that maybe playing up to this caliber, strange as this may sound, is actually benefiting them. It's keeping them on edge, which is probably causing them to prepare and pay a little bit more closer attention to detail in terms of the game plan aspect of it. And maybe now it's time to start kind of looking at, you know, some of the smaller things, like, you know, shoring up the penalties and the like. And by the way, I'm just curious to note, you know, the Patriots' dominance over over NFC North Division teams. What do you think that is?
That's interesting. Well, I do think, you know, going back to your point a couple of seconds ago about them, you know, playing some of the upper echelon teams in the NFL, that should definitely be something that they should be proud of, something that they should feel confidence in when the playoffs come around. Because over the past few years, I mean, we talk a lot about how successful they've been in the second half of seasons over the past few years, but they haven't played a whole lot of really good teams in the second half of seasons over the past years. And this year is a lot different just because of the level of competition that they're facing week in and week out right now. But as far as the NFC North goes and their ability to dominate that division, I mean, the Vikings are not a very good team. The Bears are not a very good team. The Lions are certainly a good team, but not, you know, not a dominant team. I think their offense has been, you know, rather lacking. We saw that this season or this past week. I mean, despite the big names of guys like Calvin Johnson and Golden Tate, Matthew Stafford, they just haven't been able to execute and stay in rhythm and communicate with each other on a consistent basis. And so I think that's kind of hindered them. The Packers are going to be the toughest test for them, I think, in the NFC North this season. And so it'll be interesting to see because, I mean, I defaulted to that game when people were asking earlier in the season, you know, which one of those NFC North teams was going to be the most difficult. I defaulted to the Packers only because of Aaron Rodgers and what he brings to the table as a passer. I think the Patriots are equipped to handle it, but I think Rodgers is really going to test the depth of that secondary because he's one of the better quarterbacks in terms of scrambling, getting to his second, third, and sometimes fourth read, and his ability to manage the game and take advantage of whatever a defense gives him is right up there with Tom Brady. So I do think this is going to be the toughest challenge they face in the NFC North this season.
I think it's a great point, especially, you know, the part about getting the second, third, and fourth receivers for Rodgers. And this is where, you know, the Patriots are going to have to somehow, some way, make sure that he didn't get out of the pocket, but they're going to have to put enough pressure on him to at least get some hits on him, kind of like they did Stafford this last week. Because if he does have time to get it to his third and fourth options, the Patriots can lose this football game.
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, that's the other way that the Patriots could lose is if they attack that underneath area. I think the Patriots are really going to be alert to the deep pass because of what we've seen from Rodgers and Jordy Nelson this year, and what we've also seen from Randall Cobb in his career. Devontae Adams has been good in terms of being a deep threat for them, so definitely they have some options in terms of the vertical passing game. So I would expect the Packers to try to test the Patriots linebackers in that soft belly that we often see the Patriots run on defense. Guys like Hightower and Jamie Collins are going to have big games this week. I think that's going to be where Rodgers is probably going to try to exploit them.
Yeah, I think they'll do unto the Patriots as the Patriots try to do unto them.
Mm-hmm.
You know? All right, before I let you go, Eric, what are your thoughts on Miami's game at Denver this last week? And any particular thoughts on how Buffalo seemed to, the Bills seemed to, you know, rally around the community and spank the Jets last night?
Just a heartbreaker for the Dolphins this past week. I mean, they had it in the bag. They had an 11-point lead a couple of times in that game, and then the fourth quarter they just collapsed. I look at them and I feel like they're a year away from winning a game like that. But they do have the potential, in my opinion, to compete for one of those last playoff spots. The formula for them in terms of making the playoffs remains the same really as it was before, which is, I mean, they got to sweep the Jets, beat the Ravens and the Vikings, and that should be enough to get them to 10 wins. Where they're at 6-5 right now, and I'm not sure if 10 wins will be enough to make the playoffs, but I mean, sweeping the last five games with that game against the Patriots looming large at the end of the season, that's going to be a tough challenge for them. So I do think they could make a push for the postseason. Whether or not they get there, I think depends on everybody else. But as far as the Bills go, I mean, it's funny. I have a hard time really figuring out what to make of them after the way they played against the Dolphins the previous week, and then this week going out and completely dominating an inferior team in the Jets. The Jets just look like a complete mess right now. I think they're probably going to be hitting the reset button this off season. So it'll be interesting. But for the Bills, I think, yeah, I've said this about them since the beginning of the season. I feel like they have enough talent across the board to be a good team. The only position where I have question marks is at quarterback. And really, I think it's up to Kyle Orton to play consistent quarterback for them over the final five games of the season if they want to make the playoffs.
Do the Jets push the reset button on Rex Ryan before the season's over?
Not before the season's over. I think he actually mentioned last night at his press conference after the game that he is going to be the head coach for the final five games of the season. What happens at that point, I don't think anybody knows. But I've been saying for a while, I don't think it would be smart to fire Rex Ryan mid-season.
Yeah.
You know, he's curried a lot of favor with the players on that team, and I think it would be unwise. I think they would be setting themselves up for a potential locker room disaster if they were to fire Rex Ryan, who is so beloved by the players, mid-season, when, you know, some of the problems are, you know, definitely on his shoulders. I think that, you know, we were talking about penalties earlier, and
yep,
they are right up there, the New York Jets, in terms of how often they get penalized. But definitely I do think that, you know, you look at what they've built in terms of a roster, and a lot of it falls on John Idzik too. I don't think they've done a really good job building their depth through the draft. They haven't really built much through free agency either. They've had a couple of hits in that respect, but not really enough to build a solid team. And then the obvious shortcomings at quarterback, I think, are enough to magnify any of those problems. So definitely, I look at the whole situation down there in New York. I think Rex Ryan is definitely gone after this year. I think John Idzik might be gone. He will definitely be on the hot seat if he's not gone. But I think it's a tough call for them, because if they don't fire John Idzik and he's on the hot seat, what head coaching candidate this offseason is going to want to go to New York knowing that John Idzik on the hot seat may only be there for 1 year? And if John Idzik gets fired after one more year, then you know, whatever head coach he brings on could also be fired, and then you're essentially looking at a one-and-done situation for
right.
when your head coach comes in. So I think unless Idzik gets some kind of indication that he's got a long leash, that he'll be around for at least a couple more years, it'll be a tough sell for any head coaching candidate coming in.
That's where this is a really tough call for Woody Johnson. I agree. I think this is a mess that's going to go a heck of a lot deeper than it's already gotten for the Jets.
Yeah, and the problem with that is, with all of it is, you know, if they don't fire John Idzik this season and they do continue to struggle, then, you know, they're continually, you know, trying to put that one piece in place that'll get them over the hump, and they're really just kind of shooting themselves in the foot, setting themselves back, you know, 2-3 years by doing that. So I do think that, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be fair to John Idzik to fire him after this season. I know that he's had a couple of off seasons to get some talent in there and hasn't really done well, but I mean, you know, they kept Rex Ryan around and kind of saddled Idzik with him. That really wasn't his call. Then again, this off season, same thing happened. I look at it and say, you know, if Idzik gets to hire his own guy, gets a couple more chances and falls short, then, you know, we've really seen the Idzik era run its course, but it may not even get to that point.
Very good, Eric. As always, great to visit with you. I hope you have a great Thanksgiving holiday, and we'll talk again very, very soon, maybe next week.
We'll talk to you next week.
You got it. Thanks. All right. Eric Friends, Boston.com, covering the AFC East and the Patriots. Some good thoughts there on the AFC East. And I'm remiss sometimes when I don't talk to him about that, because this is really where he's covering, you know, things. And he has some good insight on the Patriots divisional opponents. And keep in mind now, last three games of the regular season, I'm sure it hasn't escaped too many minds here, are against divisional opponents. Really? I mean, you got Miami, you got the Jets, and you got Buffalo to end up the regular season. And again, these are all games the Patriots are going to need if they're going to stay right where they currently reside. And these, again, are a few weeks on down the line. You've got to get through, you know, this week, big game, Green Bay. The entire football country is going to be locked in on New England and Green Bay this Sunday. And then next week, the Patriots, they're not even coming back this way. At least that was the last I had heard. The plans are going to stay out west and go out to San Diego, and they're going to practice out in California next week, and they're going to get ready to play the Chargers. And then they're going to get a chance to come back home, and they're going to have three straight divisional opponents to wrap up the regular season. So, you know, plenty of opportunity exists to continue rolling. I think this is really where the Patriots hope to have their success. They have to hope that, you know, these little, you know, mini challenges continue to extend themselves out to, you know, the team every week. You know, it seems like every week brings a different perspective, brings a new little challenge, brings a new little, you know, set of circumstances to try to overcome or game plan for or what have you. And frankly, the schedule could not have been set up any better. You know, the NFL in its infinite wisdom of trying to get interest at the end of the season by putting, you know, divisional games against teams against each other, to hopefully it'll have some influence on the playoff race. I don't think they really realized how good this could be, but how much of an advantage could also be for the team that's in the lead. And I think the Patriots can probably realize that that's partly the case. They're going to get a Miami team that, you know, I'm sure they're going to be ready to play for, because Miami beat them in the season opener, and that seems like a year ago, doesn't it? Then you're going to have a Jets team that's probably getting ready to sell out and go home early. And then a Buffalo team, by the time you get to the last week of the season, really probably won't have anything to play for. Be interesting to see if they can stay afloat too at 6-5 right now, and be in the hunt. If the Patriots are playing for a bye, then, you know, I think that's the worst thing in the world that could happen to Buffalo at the end, because the Patriots aren't going to rest anybody. And you're saying, oh, we got to rest them, we got to rest them. No. You're going to get a week off. If you're in a bye situation, you're going to get a week off. You need to play. You need to stay sharp. You need to stay in tune. You need to keep working on things that will continue to make you better for, you know, winning in the postseason. And I'm sure we'll have a lot of time to converse about this as the season continues to progress here. All right, 855-PATS-500, toll-free. Good conversation. Getting some good insight, not only on the Pats, but certainly on the Packers, as we get a jump start on the big New England-Green Bay game coming up this Sunday in Lambeau Field. 855-PATS-500. If you've got nitpicks to talk about, if you've got some problem areas in this football team that you have observed that maybe we're not doing a good enough job bringing up, this is where I want to hear from you. Webradio at patriots.com on email, JR Broadcaster, at JR Broadcaster, the Twitter handle, and then John.Rook on Facebook. All right, we're going to squeeze in a timeout here, get reset up here with the computer and the logins and everything, because we haven't been paying attention to them with all the phone conversation we've had this afternoon. But now it's time to pay attention to you. You take the show over, coming up here in the playbook.
Hey, what kind of sub is that?
It's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami.
Subway Big Hot Pastrami?
No, pastrami.
Pastrami!
What? Hey, get back here! Pastrami!
No, pastrami!
Look, it's the Subway Big Hot Pastrami!
Wanna split it?
A little late for that.
Get your own Subway Big Hot Pastrami Melt, a monument to flavor loaded with dry rub, pepper-crusted beef, and melty cheese. Enjoy yours with mustard and pickles. Subway, eat fresh.
Limited time only at participating restaurants.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or tri-corner hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
It's Jim from Ace Ticket. The New England Patriots are back in action, and Ace Ticket, the Patriots' official fan travel partner, is behind the team, from Foxborough all the way to Arizona. Ace Ticket is your official home for all Boston sports tickets, with free and easy pickup in Kenmore Square, across from the Boston Garden, or game day pickup at Patriot Place. So treat yourself or impress someone. Go to aceticket.com or call 1-800-MY-SEATS.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time, 2% cash back on groceries, and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to your TV. Now available for $349 at a Microsoft store near you.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Want to be a Patriots season ticket holder? Join the Patriots season ticket holder waitlist and get in the game. Be first in line to purchase Patriots season tickets as they become available and receive exclusive access to the Patriots ticket exchange and other amenities such as access to playoff tickets, Gillette Stadium concert pre-sales, and much more. Get on the list. Get in the game. Visit Patriots.com/the list to join today. Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store. Can't get enough Patriots Playbook? Find the show in the audio on demand section of Patriots.com. Catch up on live episodes you missed or simply replay your favorite Playbook moments from years past. Get inside the Patriots Playbook with John Rook whenever, wherever. Only on Patriots.com and the official Patriots apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad.
Welcome back into the Playbook for a final half hour here on a Tuesday. Hashtag nitpick Tuesday. Hadn't been a lot of nitpicks. I mean, we've got a few of them. I'm going to share them here with you. But I was looking at an email here where Tom in Baltimore sent, guys, Titans released Sean Phillips. Do the Pats take a look? I got to admit, Tom, that I was initially cool to the idea, but the more I think about it, it seems like this is almost a perfect scenario for the Patriots. You know, Phillips, you know, was a guy that, you know, seemed to do a pretty good job last year for the Broncos, right? Team that made the Super Bowl as a pass rushing guy, and he signed with Tennessee in the offseason, but he didn't really perform for the Titans this year, so the Titans are reportedly letting him go, saying that they're going to try to play younger players instead because they're not really going anywhere this year. So that means he could be available, especially with the Titans having to pick up now, you know, the majority of his salary. He could be made available to a team who needs a situational pass rusher. I frankly think I could see him probably in Denver before I could see him in New England. But you have to at least think about it. And I guess the thing that would concern me is whether or not Chandler Jones is going to return at some point. If the Patriots were to know that Jones was not coming back, then this really, I think, going after a guy like Phillips and renting him, you know, makes sense. I think if they don't make any noise about it, then I think they kind of feel like we're going to get him back for, you know, maybe the last regular season game or two, or certainly for the playoffs, and we should be in good shape because we really like Akeem Ayers. And it's hard to say that, you know, Ayers hasn't done the job, because he really has. I think he's been fairly effective when he's been in there, you know, in situational situations, so to speak, at the risk of sounding redundant, because that's exactly what they went out and got him for in the first place, from Carolina. Situations. So that's what Sean Phillips would be doing as well. If you could tell me that Jones was not coming back, then I'd say, sure, kick the tires on it. If not, I think I'd wait for Chandler Jones to come back, and you feel like you're going to get a boost either way. So I hope that answers your question, but it's a good one, Tom, in Baltimore. It's a good one. Worth asking. Brian says, didn't Blunt just put up 87 yards and limited snaps with two touchdowns against the best rush defense of the game? So how can't they run again after a day of being back with the team, no less? And correct me if I'm wrong, but the Patriots' run defense has stepped up big time in this stretch, right? Sure, Lacy may be better than the ones they faced, but you could also argue the offensive weapons of the Packers aren't anywhere near some of the offenses that they faced either, correct? Well, not entirely. I think the Packers have some pretty good wideouts. I think it's hard to say that Nelson and Cobb, you know, aren't two really solid receivers. But I see where you're going with this, Brian. He says, on paper, it just doesn't seem like it's a great matchup for the Packers and that the Patriots should have this one, right? Packers haven't faced anywhere near the level of competition that the Patriots have this year. Patriots have actually manhandled every one of those challenges. I'm not saying the Pats will dismantle them, but the amount of downplaying I'm hearing is rather strange. Well, you know, Brian, we're not the ones doing all the downplaying. You're going to hear the rest of the downplaying coming from the guys down the hallway. You really think anybody's going to stand up and say, oh, yeah, we're going to beat these guys easy? You really think that's going to happen? Come on. Don't be naive, Brian. Joe says, gentlemen, can you guys post on the Pats site the video of the magnificent punt return Julian had called back against the Lions for a block well behind the play? I'd like to watch a few more times. Bet many other Pats fans would too. Well, since it really didn't result in anything, I'm not sure that's going to happen, Joe, but thanks for passing that on. Here's William, who's a Pack fan from Hong Kong. Respect to the Pats, who have perhaps the best organization in the NFL, but I am rooting for the Pack. How do we disrupt Brady? As I think it's our best chance to tilt it the Pack's way. I predict points after turnovers will decide the game. Cannot say you are incorrect at all, William. Cannot say that at all. I think you're actually spot on. Because when you, as I said, mentioned earlier in the program today, when, you know, you have two teams that, you know, take away the football from the opponent as well as these two teams do, and they are 1-2, Green Bay being 1, New England being 2, in the giveaway takeaway ratio. Clearly, you're doing something right. That's a big part of your game. Packers are going to try to do what they can to take the football away. Patriots really have to emphasize ball security this week, whether you're a running back or a receiver. And if the Patriots are guilty of leaving the ball on the field, or if Tom throws into a coverage that he shouldn't have thrown to, well, if you give the Packers a short field to work with, this is how Green Bay wins this game. There's no doubt in my mind. Be interesting to see how the Packers decide to go about trying to disrupt Brady, as you suggest. You know, it's just going to be a Julius Peppers kind of day, as we talked about earlier as well with, you know, our calling all sports friends from Milwaukee. Jack says, John, there's not a lot to complain about lately, but one thing I would like to bring up is the lack of long passes. Brian Tim stood on the sideline the entire game like he could go in any moment. Now, I'm not sure what's causing the lack of deep ball, but Tim's as fast as hell. LaFell could get down there. Edelman and Amendola can get just about anywhere as fast as they need to. We seem to have given up on Aaron Dobson. We released Tompkins, and it seems we only have one guy left who can stretch the field with amazing speed in Tim, so why not use him? I wouldn't say Tim's has amazing speed. I think that's a sort of a misnomer there, Jack. He's got good speed, but he's got size, which is what seems to tantalize everybody. He says, do you think it's a trust issue? Do you think of Brady overthrowing guys by just a foot or two in the last three games, or is it play calling? You know, Brady overthrowing guys by just a foot or two, yeah, well, that has happened. We've seen it. But you do take some stabs down the field because you have to try to let the opposing team know that you are capable. Love to see them connect on one of those, but they just haven't been able to. Teams are scared as hell of that. And plus, they're playing guys back because they don't want a guy like Gronk to get behind them. You don't want a guy like Gronk to get in front of you either. I'm just saying, I think the whole Brian Timms thing is being totally overestimated, overrated. You know, he's good, but he's a rookie. And that's going to be something. I mean, who would you put him in there for? Really? He has to replace somebody in the lineup. And when he was in there late in the game this last week, he was in there for LaFell. Who's he going to replace in the lineup? So I'm just not sure where you guys are going on this thing. And he's not, you know, he's got good speed, not great speed. It's not like he's a, you know, world-class sprinter. Brian in Essex, Vermont. It would have been 17 negative points had the refs called the obvious hold on Gronk with the headable interception. It's a good point, Brian. He was mugged harder than Browner mugged Thomas in the end zone against the Broncos, and that was called. That was inside the 5 when it happened. Should have been called. Interception should have been nullified, and the Pats very likely would have scored. My nitpick from the game is honestly the refs. Largely, they called the game right, but they missed two punches from Raiola to the back of Moore's head and to his face. They missed on an egregious hold on Gronk and allowed an interception to stand. It should never have happened. No complaints with that, Brian. Other than that, the penalties also, again, they got to keep that down in the playoffs because that could come back to haunt them. This is kind of what I'm building toward. You know, you're hearing all these, you know, well, other factors. Some of the other emailers are like, you know, I'm, you know, you're protesting too much. Well, we're going to get to the playoffs, and the Patriots, you know, shoot themselves in the foot, and it costs them, and then they don't get to play next week, and we don't get a chance really to talk about it. Then, hey, then you'll know what I'm talking about now. These are all things that must be addressed now, as we're 6 weeks away from getting this thing started. Brian says, again, if they're limiting them teams to 20-point differentials in the playoffs, they can afford to give a few penalties here and there. Sure they can. Sure they can. They absolutely can. And if my uncle were my were a female, he'd be my aunt, I suppose, as the saying goes. Howard in Stratford. Nitpicks. Number one, penalties, although I defended the idea that attitude penalties were not an issue. I don't recall one attitude penalty being called in that game against the Pats. That's true. Penalties, for the most part, pass interference on Gronk, just a lack of discipline and dumb. There you go. Thank you, Howard, for saying that for me. I appreciate that. Offense taking the second half off. I'm sure the Pats took their foot off the accelerator to a certain extent, but some of the play calls were, be it by Josh or audible by Brady at the line, were head scratchers. And number three, getting the QB down when they got to him, or when they do get to him. It's a carryover from some other games where it looks like they have a quarterback or running back in the backfield for a loss, and then the next thing you know, they've escaped and they're making a positive play. Wrap up and take down. Boy, did they do that against Stafford on a couple of plays. And I know probably what you're thinking of, Howard. So that's a good point by you, and that's a good nitpick. All that said, I'm ecstatic at where the Pats stand at this point of the season and how they're looking in all three phases. Perhaps it's false bravado as a fan, but I'll take these Pats in all three phases, plus coaching, and put them against anyone else in the NFL, and that includes this week's opponent. But that's another email for another day. Excellent, Howard. Tyler from New York. John, my biggest nitpick concern is long snapping. Danny Aiken has been really inconsistent this season. I'm worried that if we have to kick a field goal or get a good punt off at the end of the game, he might mess up the snap. I'm trying to figure if Tyler is being tongue-in-cheek with this or not. I'm not sure. I guess I'd have to know him a little bit better to understand what he's coming at or where he's coming at. But even though he did flub one this last week, snap, Ryan Allen got off a beauty, and it ended up being a big factor, I thought, in the game. So I think the Patriots have the ability to overcome it. Jay says, in Rochester, near Rochester, New York, he says, John, don't feel bad. I fell asleep too. Of course, I was watching the game at 11 p.m. when I got home from work. My nitpick last week was on Amendola's bad decisions as a returner, running a kickoff from out deep of the end zone and then fielding a punt inside the 10. This week is that the special teams made me look like an idiot, as Amendola had a great return from the end zone and Edelman let a punt go inside the 10 and it was down at the 6. I guess I know now why I am in food service and not football. My real nitpick is the second half offensive output. Not sure if they let up because of the lead or that Detroit's D made some adjustments. Have been listening to the playbook for around 12 years now. I'm happy to be listening live for the first time. Was weird to hear your voice of reason in the melee that is PFW in progress. Looking forward to hearing Austin again as well. Thank you, Jay. Appreciate your support. Thanks for listening to the program. Glad you have a chance to do it live today. It's kind of fun. I have to admit, it was kind of fun having Austin and his friend Max on the program. I have to admit, Austin comes by it honestly. He's done nothing but basically hang around his dad and, you know, coming to games. He's even spotted for me here at the stadium when I've needed, an extra spotter on occasion. So he's not like he hasn't been around the game of football in his whole life. He played 1 year of high school football, really wasn't very good at it, but loves the sport enough, kind of like I was, to where he really gets into it. You know, Austin was a baseball player and was very good as a baseball player before he wrecked his shoulder. But, he's been passionate about football just like I have been. And it probably comes from being, where he was when he grew up, which was with me most of the time. And I haven't grown up in the state of Texas. That's why I love the state, football, because I grew up with it. Would love to have played it. I would love to have been blessed with, 6'4" frame and 240 pounds. That would have been awesome. I wasn't. It's the way it goes. But it was a lot of fun having him on the show. Hopefully we'll do that again at some point, especially if there is a Super Bowl preview on down the line. You never know. Kashif says, I want to say you're doing a great job. You're really living up to one of BP's mantras. Do your job. Thank you, Kashif. I also want to spread some of that tropical warmth your way. Just think warm thoughts. That should help through the coming cold times. Thanks a lot, jackass. I say that lovingly. So my nitpick is why Bill isn't enforcing his disciplinary actions fairly across all players. I agree with the no practice session for Jonas, but I thought he went too far by not allowing him to play. The same thing happened to Revis earlier this season, but he played. We can go further with Blunt. He walked away in the middle of the game with his previous team. It cost him his job there. I know there could be valid reasons for his actions, but presently those actions are seen as selfish. With that said, how could he do something like that and play the following week? I'm all for proper discipline, but it should be performed fairly across the board. Kashif, I got no issue with what you're saying. I'm very old school about it myself. You know, not starting him, not playing him in the first half, fine. Sitting him out the whole game, didn't really set well with me. But, you know, like you said, you know, got to do my own job. You got to do your own job. So I understand all of that. That was Kashif from Jamaica. Thanks for sending the warmth our way, bruh. Let's see. What else do we have here? Brian says, I don't think it's complacency, John. I think it's honesty. Just looking at the Patriots and Green Bay on paper, their body worked this far this season. On paper, the Patriots have a much better secondary. On paper, the Patriots can run on Green Bay. If Blunt can get 87 yards, a couple of TDs, unlimited carries, they can run it on Green Bay at will. All right. Oh, this, I think, is largely a repeat of the early one that I read. Thank you, Brian, for sending that again. Steve in Killeen says, John, the apparent nit you've already pointed out is the ongoing laundry on the field. My frustration is the inconsistency of the calls. Gronk got mugged on the interception that shouldn't have been, but bad calls at bad times are just how some games go. Yeah, absolutely. He did get mugged on that pick. Agreed. My other nit is DirecTV killing the last 5 minutes of the game, a la the Heidi Bowl. They did? Did that happen? Kevin, did you hear about that? Did DirecTV really kill the last 5 minutes?
I didn't hear anything about it.
That's the first I've heard of it. Steve says, congrats to Rook the Younger, so Austin is going to be AR broadcaster for advanced radio broadcaster? He hopes someday. And before I forget, a very happy Thanksgiving to one and all. Thank you, Steve. Same to you. Drew in Bowie says, John, I think many of the defensive penalties are an acceptable part of the defense's aggressiveness, especially in the eyes of Belichick. If the penalties were worse than the alternative, BB would have them eliminated by now. That's a good point. I kind of thought that too, Drew, but it still doesn't set well with me because I think allowing penalties as an acceptable part is acknowledging they exist and not doing anything about it. And you don't want somebody to do something stupid at a time when they don't need to be doing something stupid. It could come back and cost you. I mean, habits become habitual, right? Think about that for a second. Habits become habitual. He says, my concern with Green Bay is a great QB with vision, awareness, and a strong arm coupled with the legs to extend drives on 3rd and 5. Pats bottle up an immobile quarterback like Manning, appropriately ignoring his feet. Guys like Cam Newton cause a different type of problem, and Rodgers is a dangerous mix of the two styles. Precisely why, for my money, he's, you know, arguably, you know, the top quarterback in the NFL today. The only thing that separates him and what Tom Brady is doing right now is age. That's it. Brian says, you just said New England fans don't feel this juggernaut can be stopped. You haven't talked to every New England fan and cannot make that statement. That's a general feeling that I have, Brian, and we all deal in generalities here, just like you do. Any team can be stopped on any given Sunday. I'm glad to hear somebody say that because the way that the emails and the cards and letters and the phone calls are coming in, I don't get that at all. I don't hear that at all. I think everybody feels like here that, you know, this is an entitlement right into the Super Bowl. He says, we've seen good teams drop games they should win. We've seen bad teams outperform their constituent parts. I think it'll be a great game. I'm leaning Patriots because I feel the offensive, defensive, and special teams matchups favor the Patriots. And given the quality of competition and the performance of both teams over the past 7 games, I don't think you can argue that. If the Packers had not sort of just sleptwalked their way to a win over Minnesota this last weekend, I would say you're 110% correct, Brian. But, you know, if the Packers play like they did against Minnesota this last week, the Patriots win. Packers come back and put pedal to metal like they did a couple of weeks ago, then I think the Patriots have some troubles. Jeffrey in Florida. John, Green Bay is ranked 30th against the run on the four-letter network. Do you see a game plan like the Patriots had in Indianapolis, especially if Cameron Fleming can play? Totally. I think they run it at him, and I think they try to control clock, tempo, everything else. I agree with that. He said, I heard Revis tell the media the DBs are calling themselves the hybrids. I think they need some help with a handle. I'm pushing the X-Men. Each is unique, talented, and versatile. They mix and match depending on the opponents, like unlike any other team. And, of course, they win. That's a good one. That's sort of a modern day, you know, right? The X-Men. It's a good idea. Thank you, Jeffrey. Enjoy your Thanksgiving as well. Gabe in Pennsylvania. John, I'm going to keep this simple. No real nitpicks. You haven't already discussed, but I want to put this out to the Pats, please. When they play Green Bay, I don't want them to get embarrassed like the Kansas City game, fly, slip all over the field. You know, the Packers use the same field turf as the Eagles do, so I'm pleading to the equipment guys, please, please go back to those Eagles games, see what footwear they wore, and make sure you pack the same footwear for Green Bay. Interesting. That's usually an overlooked aspect of who you play and why they win at home so much. They're used to the turf. I want our boys ready to rock the Packers. Interesting. Thank you, Gabe. Consider it duly passed on. Randy from New Orleans says, I have one small nitpick other than the already mentioned nitpick about the offense only scoring 10 points in the second half. I keep seeing Belichick not giving Timms the long balls that he's giving to LaFell and Edelman. Both of Edelman's drops could have had better probability of being caught by a longer, taller Timms. Even with a LaFell drop, it's been shown that LaFell is not the guy for deep balls because he didn't have the speed that Timms has. I'm not hailing him as the next Moss. I'd like to see the Pats use him in his strengths instead of wasting throws. I don't think it's a wasted throw. And I know they like Timms in that situation because they feel like Timms is stronger to the football and better after he catches the football. Nothing wrong with Brian Timms, but there's a reason why LaFell's in the game. Mike says, I think the Patriots are going to roll up in the Green Bay and bust them in the mouth. I think our defense is far better than theirs. That makes all the difference. I feel like Green Bay is a clone of Indianapolis. Good offense, decent defense, can't stop the run. Both quarterbacks are going out of the pocket, but if Aaron Rodgers has a good game, that means our secondary has a bad game. And I don't think that happens. What are your thoughts? That's an interesting comparison. I think Green Bay is a little better than Indianapolis. I think Green Bay's defense is going to show that it's probably a little better than Indianapolis. But statistically, you may be hard-pressed. I may be hard-pressed to prove that. Then let's go to the home field advantage. And I think that, you know, whereas, you know, home field is usually good for anywhere from 3 to 7 points for the home team. I just, you know, I think the Colts are built as a dome team, and more so, and the Packers are probably somewhat seasoned and tough because they do play in the, on the frozen tundra of Lambeau Field. Call me crazy. I take Green Bay in that instance. I think Green Bay is a little better. Know your history, John. Miami's record at home first game of the season when the temp is above 80 is reminiscent of the Patriots' divisional splits over the past 10 years. Many people gave Miami more than a shot in that, even Fred Kirsch, I believe, simply because of the weather that the Patriots practice in versus that of Miami. Never mind the offensive line issues or Gronk's health or LaFell's unfamiliarity with the offense or Browner not playing, it may as well be a completely different year because this team now is nothing like what Miami saw in week one. And you can bet your Aunt Susie that the Patriots will be more focused for that game. When was the last time a divisional opponent swept the Pats? Brian, I'm totally agreeing. I'm not sure what you're referring to. He says, I'm kind of shocked at how much you're leaving out valid points in today's discussions. I'm not leaving out any points. You're bringing them up, and I'm reading them. How is that leaving anything out? You're making valid points. I simply just think Green Bay is stronger at home than anybody seems to be willing to give them credit for. Plain and simple. Plain and simple. That's the only thing I'm saying here. Eldridge in North Carolina, you're in the playbook. Hey, Eldridge.
Hey, John, how you doing today?
I'm good, buddy.
I'm doing good. I wish I could have saw the game, but I'm down in Tampa at 80-some degrees, and I couldn't see nothing but Tampa and Miami.
Oh, good for you. Well, then you have to watch it on NFL Network on a replay or something.
You should tell Eldridge you go to your favorite bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wait a second. If you're down in my, or, you know, you should, I got two places you can get to. There are a couple of bars that have all the, you know, the games on. So you gotta hit them.
Yes, sir. But see, I can't go down there with a truck. I have to make a delivery Monday morning.
Well, then you gotta go find a place that's trucker friendly.
Oh, I should have, but I didn't. Well, my nitpick is like everybody else keeps saying, is the referees and, mainly just about it and not, he's giving great just a little run. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I know he messed up, but we're not the coach. That's Belichick rules, or just Belichick rule. But going with most of your callers and their email about Kim, the reason why we keep saying it, and the reason why I keep saying it too, is, okay, that's not LaFell's game. Edelman ain't fast enough. And I know Kim is not super fast, but every time I'm seeing him, he got everybody beat. You know, and then, like that pick, the last game against the Colts, that safety wasn't there, that was six. And he had everybody else beat by six yards, mm-hmm. 7 yards. If that safety wouldn't draw, the safety dropped back, because I guess he was trying to shadow Gronk, that's how he got that pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then plus Brady was getting hit.
Right.
But Brady putting up on the ball. But Brady puts him on that ball, one of the guys hit, that was 6 points. But the point is, he's better equipped than which guy. He's not a rookie. He's been in this league for about 3 years, though. Thanks.
Okay.
He's been about 3 years. And he started off with San Francisco when Moss was there a little bit. You know. So that's what I'm saying. I just wish they would do that too.
Mm-hmm.
Just get everybody back off of. And everybody complacent. I'm not complacent. I'm like, Hugh Jones, you're going to Green Bay's house. So, you know. And they is kind of tough. Their defense may be a little suspect, but they still can put pressure and they still get wins. You know, they still can do that. And I'm not overconfident. I'm hoping we come out to win, but it ain't going to be that easy. I don't think. If it does to be that easy, I'm just going to shut my mouth and like, okay, y'all, keep going.
Yeah. I get it, and like the emailer was just you know chiding me, I guess, for leaving out valid points. I'm not leaving out any valid points. All I'm trying to point out is that you're actually going up against a pretty good team in their building, and to assume that the Patriots are going to be able to roll over them only because statistically Green Bay say compares favorably to Indianapolis, I think it's a terrible assumption to make.
Me too, because I don't see that. Because I don't see Indianapolis with Eddie Lacy or with Stark.
Yep.
I don't think Indianapolis with Cobb. Hilton might be fast, but Cobb is polished. You know. And then what scares me is like they gave Golden Tate 100 yards, they gave T.Y. Hilton about 100 yards, they didn't get an end zone, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But see, Cobb's getting an end zone. And Arrington and Ryan, just like your son said, they ain't capable to carry the cover.
Right.
You know, if anything, I'll blanket Cobb and put Reavers on Nelson. You know, I'll do that.
Yeah, that's a good thought. That's a good thought.
Instead of just, you know, whatever.
Yeah, right. And I'm sure they will mix it. Frankly, Eldridge, I think they'll mix and match because it seems to have worked well against, you know, some of the other premier receivers that they've played recently. So I see no reason why they would stray from that particular, game plan against the Packers this weekend. Eldridge, are you traveling this weekend on Thanksgiving?
I got a load to pick up on right back down to Tampa, and I'm supposed to bring it back by Thanksgiving Day. I'll be at the house by Thanksgiving.
All right. Well, listen, just be safe out there. I hope you have a good holiday.
All right, so you too. Have a good one.
Thanks. All right. Let me grab just a couple of Facebook posts here, because I know I got a few of them before we get to the end of the program. Balarco says, Nitpick Tuesday. Number one, Danny Aiken. It wasn't just one bad snap on the second punt. Even his other snaps were a little too much to the left. Lackluster offense in the second half. Constant problem. Only scored 3 points until that last drive with a blunt TV. And then, of course, penalty flags. Duly noted, although I think people are pulling my leg with Danny Aiken, so that's fine. Have your fun. let's see. Paul says, great win against an unexpectedly poor Detroit. For Nitpick Tuesday, my main gripe is that we put so little emphasis on the run. I know the front seven is the strength of the Lions D, but even so, we made ourselves in one-dimensional, and early in the fourth quarter when we needed to be looking to chew some clock, we went 3 and out, 3 passes, 2 of which were incomplete. Poor play calling and clock management. And then my other nitpick was our last touchdown. A penalty negated a field goal, but personally, I would have kept the points on the board, as I feared that letting Sue back on the field meant he might target Brady with a cheap shot. Well, we did end up getting a cheap shot. It just came from somebody else other than Ndamukong Suh. Let's see. What else we have? A couple of others here. Some people are already throwing in some scores, which is fine, but we'll wait on that for tomorrow. Marcus says, John, I try not to be overly optimistic, but how can you not be the way the Pats look this year? If they win on Sunday, I just think they're going to take it all. Love the show. Thank you. Fair enough point. And I'm sure that, you know, there'll be, 100 people, or more. 1,000 people or more jumping on, you know, that bandwagon. If, of course, that happens, next week. Yeah, see, here's another one on Twitter. I'm very worried about Danny Aiken long snapping. He's been inconsistent this year. What do we do? Do I sound sarcastic reading that, Kev? by the way. Here's one from Matt. John Amendola needs to stop fielding kick returns when coverage players are in his face. Limit penalties. Okay. I understand that. And I understand why Amendola does what he does, because you're hoping to kind of catch him off guard. And hoping that, you know, with a late signal that you can, you know, maybe sucker an opponent into a penalty. Possibly. But it is risky. There's no doubt about that. That's a risky tactic to take. Diego says, is it just me or is Brady trending downward? Four picks in the last three games. Some throws on Sunday were way off. Peaked too early? Oh, don't say that. You're going to risk the ire of Patriots Nation, Diego. Kashif, my nitpick is Sunday can't get here any quicker. Where's a time machine when you need one? That's a good one. That's very good. All right. Appreciate that. Good stuff today, gang. Very, very good stuff. My thanks to the Calling All Sports duo of Austin Rook and Max Templin from Marquette Radio in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, for joining us and simulcasting a bit on the program earlier today. I hope you got a little perspective from it, and thank you for allowing me the chance to, you know, let some aspiring college kids try to perfect their profession to be. And I thought they did a representative job. Certainly seem to know their stuff on the Packers, to give you a bit of a sneak peek. Since we're trying to combine things this week with just 2 days to come to you. And thanks, of course, to Eric Friends, as always, for getting into the playbook to talk Nick Picks and other things. Tomorrow's program will be, well, a combination of hashtag WTF Wednesday and Prediction Thursday, because we won't be here for Thursday because of the holiday. So I'm going to want you to predict the Patriots-Packers tomorrow. More on Green Bay and the big matchup that everybody's calling the Super Preview. Will it be that? Certainly looks like it could be. Fantasy Football Focus coming up next. Patriots.com Radio. See you tomorrow.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf,
CBS analyst. Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2. Yeah.